Blog Talk Radio.
I just danced to that tune in the whitest way possible. Thank you, everybody, for joining us once again. You're on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com, and actually right here, right now, I got James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. James?
What's up?
How you doing,
man? How's it going, bro-hom?
Oh, man, I'm a little depressed, to be honest. I mean, my good buddy Victor Ortiz lost this last week. I'm kind of trying to find the will to go on, to be honest with you.
Vincent Ortiz, you mean?
Well, Vincent, Victor, same thing, right? Vincenzo, whatever.
I think so. Yeah, kind of devastating, right?
Yeah, I'm a little depressed. I'm kind of lost in life. I don't know what to do. I've been listening to a little bit of Bauhaus, Godspeed You Black Emperor, all sorts of stuff like that, and I don't know what to do. Typo Negative, you name it.
I don't blame you. I mean, it was, my faith in mankind was shattered a bit. I don't know what else to say.
The show must go on. Yeah, the show must go on. I don't know. Speaking of which, whatever. I guess we'll just hop right into some Victor Ortiz. Well, Louis Collazo, Victor Ortiz, since he was the one who won. I mean, that was pretty shocking. I didn't see something like that happening. You know,
It seems like we should have seen this coming.
Really, though, we really should have.
I did think there was a good possibility he could lose, but yeah, I didn't see him getting like one punched like that. Although, you know, he didn't really get knocked out. I mean, he was he did appear to me to kind of make the decision that, you know, it wasn't worth continuing. That part's not really that surprising, but you know, it's just another weird chapter in the Ortiz story.
Yeah,
I think
no
the
joke.
Bottom, the biggest thing I take away from it is that I just don't think that the guy really wants to do this.
Well, I mean, you know, last week you didn't call the exact outcome. I mean, did anybody really? I don't think anybody called anything like that, but at least not to my knowledge. But you basically called it, you know, you called the situation. You called the situation was that anything could fucking happen, and no matter what happened, it would be shocking, but not that shocking, because anything could happen, you know?
Right. It somehow managed to be the most shocking outcome, I think, though. Even everyone going into it, even thinking that anything could happen. And, I mean, I think that it was probably disappointing in some respects because, you know, I think you do – I mean, we would have liked to have seen a good fight, and I think that was possible. I actually think it was turning into a good fight. But I think that – I just don't think Ortiz – I mean, it was a great punch that caught him. There's no question. And I'm not saying that he – you know, we should – you know, pile onto him again and say that he quit, you know, and pull out the old Q word. But I do think that I think it's fair to question, you know, how invested he is in boxing and if it's something he even wants to do. I mean, did he even have a trainer for this fight? I mean, it looked to me like they just fired Danny Garcia and then just basically just had all the same guys. But, you know, I don't know. It was just crazy. I mean, it didn't look like – it just looked like he basically, you know, the first significant blow that he took, he just, you know,
pause.
Not went to his knee and kind of said, fuck it.
Pause again. Yeah, no, it really did look like it was on the verge of heating up because Ortiz had – I mean, round one was – it wasn't really a whole lot to, you know, shake a stick at, but – it looked like Victor Ortiz was starting to open up a little bit in round two. He was starting to kind of throw a little bit harder, almost with this look on his face like he had something to prove. Like he wanted to take care of business. He wanted to hurt Louis Collazo. And, it looked like it was going to turn into something. And then, I mean, he left himself wide open. And, I, you know, as much as I'm
Well, I was going to say, as much as I want to make jokes, but let me even amend that shit. As much as I'm going to make jokes, because there's no way around it, because it's Victor Ortiz and everybody's going to make some fucking jokes. As much as we're going to make jokes, being more serious about what happened stylistically and all that type of stuff, I honestly think that Victor Ortiz probably didn't really make any type of cardinal sin or anything that crazy when he got caught. He was in against a fellow Southpaw. Southpaws don't fight other Southpaws that often, and they're not used to that look and those angles. And so, especially with the right hook from the Southpaw stance is a punch that, like, no fighter really seems to get a grasp on when a Southpaw really knows how to throw a good right hook. And so, you know, that said, I think that he just didn't see the shot coming. He was right in the middle of throwing a combination. And although I think maybe he probably could have made it to his feet, it also looked like his legs were going. Like his legs, just from that shot alone, were like just not even there. So I'm not totally sure that he could have gotten up because, it would definitely go with him, you know, with his MO as a fighter that he could have but didn't. But it looked kind of to me like his legs were just not there.
Well, I'm not saying that the guy's like, oh, he's a pussy for not getting up or something like that. But I think if you contrast that, I mean, it was, he got caught by a perfect, you know, short right hook, totally didn't see it coming, was about to throw his own punch. But you got to take into account, I mean, it is Luis Collazo throwing that. And I just contrast that to Abner Mares' response after getting caught by the punch he got caught with from Johnny Gonzalez. You know, I mean, just different types of thing. A guy who, just different reactions. I mean, obviously they're different guys, but, you know, in one fighter you see a guy who is so desperate, you know, and there's no doubt in my mind Mares was much more badly hurt than Ortiz was. But that's a fighter who, he's a real fighter who knows what was at stake and was doing everything he could to fight, you know, to get up, to prove. Ortiz did not care, you know. He took the punch.
No.
And it was a good punch. You got to give Collazo credit. But, you know, he pretty much, to me, there's no time left in the round. And I think it's, you could even contrast it to Ortiz himself. I just think that when you look back at that Andre Berto fight, and, you know, the same things happened to him that happened against Collazo, against Maidana, you know, the same defensive deficiencies. I mean, he got hit with punches that hurt him, but in that fight, you know, he was a man possessed, and he got up and he took the risk that could get, you know, more badly hurt. He fought through it, and, you know, and that was like his, you know, his defining moment, I guess, or like, you know, his best fight. And it just seems like, you know, once he's achieved that, and then the whole sucker punch fiasco, I don't think he's the same guy.
I would say, yeah, I would say that he probably is not the same guy. And I mean, all face lube and all that type of stuff aside, he does have other ventures outside of boxing now, you know, and this is definitely not the first time we've seen that a guy turns more into kind of a brand and loses interest in working so hard to be a fighter, because being a fighter is not easy. You know?
I mean, you think about it, I mean, it really doesn't sound fun. I mean, you want to spend, you know, hours in the gym with that motley crew of dudes, you know, in his entourage, or do you want to, you know, hang out in Cali and, you know, go to Oscar's parties and live that lifestyle? You know, and now that he's got a little bit of fame himself, I mean, I don't know. I wish him the best as far as his, like, you know, VO skincare brand. I don't know how popular that really is, or if it's just something that, you know, boxing people know about. But, yeah, I mean, I just don't think the guy, like, mentally wants to be a fighter. And we probably saw, you know, the best hint of that was his speech after the Maidana fight, which I think he's unfairly criticized for it. You know, it's just, if he doesn't want to be a fighter, then he shouldn't have to be a fighter. But I didn't see any evidence in that ring. I mean, it was a great, like, all credit to Collazo for taking advantage of the opportunity, and he landed a great punch. But I just think everything with Victor Ortiz, I mean, you have to take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, I don't know. I think it sucks because, he is an exciting fighter, and he's definitely a really fun kind of sideshow and a spectacle. But I just don't think the guy wants to do it. I've never seen anything to convince, you know, ever since the Berto fight. I mean, I just haven't, you know, I think against Mayweather, maybe he went in with the right mindset and, you know, was executing, you know, a decent game plan for himself. But, I mean, ever since that, I don't know. I don't think any of his comments have suggested that this is something that he's really passionate about or, you know. is willing to stand, you know, do what he has to do, take the punishment that he has to take, or put in more work to become, you know, more technical and protect himself. I don't know. I don't think he's willing to do that anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, on top of that, I think that we've also I don't think Victor Ortiz is a bad fighter by any means. I think that he's a talented guy. He's got pretty decent hand speed. You know, he's got pretty solid power. He does have his issues and things that he kind of tends to do that are bad, et cetera. And the point is, I don't think that those types of things, his flaws, those are the types of things that, you know, he's been fighting since he was a kid, and they're probably not going to go away. And it would take some pretty intensive type of training to really modify those behaviors. And yeah, you said it, and I don't think that he's really interested in doing that anymore. And I don't really blame him for that either. You know, it ain't easy. And he at this point, he's already gotten his ass kicked a few times. You know, he's gotten his ass kicked pretty good a few times.
And I think a lot of Ortiz's flaws are also mental. You know, I think that he had such explosive power that as he moved up and fought guys who, you know, his power, like against Maidana, against Berto, you know, it's against Lamont Peterson. He had enough, you know, his power was there. It put him on the canvas, but those guys got up and continued to fight. And when they did, that gave him problems. You know, that's when he had those lapses where he just let himself get hit. And I don't know if, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just think it's a lot. Like, after this fight, a lot of people were saying, like, oh, Colasso fits right in there with, like, any top welterweight. And I don't know. That's another interesting question coming out of the fight. I personally am kind of skeptical of that because I do rate Ortiz pretty low at this point.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, you even a couple weeks ago were like, fuck what the discussion is today. Let's talk about Ortiz Colasso, you know. I mean, you've been looking forward to this fight seriously, so. That said, do you think that, it wasn't a long, drawn-out fight. It wasn't a fight of the year, a contender type of thing. But even so, do you think that this kind of maybe redeems Golden Boy and their Fox Sports deal a little bit that has been absolutely atrocious?
Yeah, I think it was by far the best program. And, I mean, there was a lot of buzz beforehand, too, because I think people were just excited to kind of – they know that Ortiz brings the unexpected and, you know, excited to kind of see what happened. The unfortunate part of that is it doesn't look like we're going to be, you know, getting much more Ortiz based on that result, because I don't think he wants to be a fighter. And if he does come back, you know, who knows? I mean, I guess if he really, really, you know, had some kind of revelation and he was like, you know – what, like, I'm willing to do it, I'm going to, you know, give it one more chance, then he's, you know, he's got maybe a rematch with Colasso. I mean, that's, like, the first move he has to do, but who knows? I mean, I did have a sense that, like, once Ortiz got knocked out, I mean, I think the sense was kind of like, okay, well, that was crazy. It's not what we expected. You know, it's another kind of classic Ortiz moment, but the whole, like, Ortiz carnival is the fun part of it, because it is fun to kind of, you know, there's a lot of comedic material and all that. So, you know, I think I had a sense that was kind of ending with this. Because, you know, even if he does come back and fight, if he turns into a guy who just, you know, is getting knocked out every time he gets in the ring against guys who aren't even known for power, I mean, that's not fun to win. Then it just becomes sad. So, I don't know, it was really interesting to me what happened, because I think that Ortiz suddenly became this kind of, like, cult hero because he was so goofy that, like, everyone just kind of, like, was excited to see, you know, his weird personality and, you know, the excitement that he's brought into the ring. And I think he had a chance that if he really wanted to be serious about boxing and he could have won this fight, I think going forward, he would have been right back in the mix with, you know, the top guys Golden Boy has at welterweight. And we would have all been pretty excited to see him. And so I guess for boxing fans, I mean, it's great to see, like, a lifelong underdog, a guy like Colasso, get a big win like that. I mean, that's always good, but I do think there was some sadness in thinking that the Ortiz, you know, train wreck might have come to an end.
Well, James, Victor Ortiz during the pre-fight promotion kept saying that he wanted the D. Do you think that maybe his face lube was lacking in vitamin D?
I don't know. I don't. I haven't checked out the ingredients of face lube. In fact, I don't even know. I wouldn't even know it exists. I mean, I don't know. Is it a pop? Like, that's the other thing. It's like, is Face Lube, is it even, like, a successful brand? Or do we all just know about it because of we follow boxing? You know? I mean, I wouldn't
know anything about it. Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about it if I didn't follow boxing.
I mean, you know, it's just probably the easiest. It's like the low-hanging fruit on the Victor Ortiz clowning tree. You know, you want to make a joke about Victor Ortiz, that's like the lowest hanging fruit, and I'll take it. I don't care.
The commercial
I'll pick that low hanging fruit.
It's worth taking.
It's a little ridiculous.
Worth, and, I, you know, and the other, but the other beautiful thing about Thursday night, I did think that the Vincent blunder from Barry Tompkins, I thought that that also added another great, like, comedic layer to what might be the last time, you know, because there was just, you know, Twitter was going crazy with everybody, you know, chiming in with the face lube jokes and, you know, Vincent and all that, and it was just like a fun atmosphere, and he's like one of the few guys who can create something like that that at least inspires, like, you know, the comedic part of the boxing fans, you know, interactions. And I think if that was, you know, if that is the end, if that is how he's going to go out or whatever. And the only reason I'm talking in these kind of terms, I mean, yeah, boxers can lose, but I thought Oscar De La Hoya tweeting, you know, right afterward that he thinks Ortiz should kind of consider calling it quits. I just thought that was really telling. I mean, because that's a dude who's like was like his mentor, his idol, and if he's out there saying Ortiz, then that to me kind of says like this guy's heart's just not in it, and everybody knows that, and you know, he probably shouldn't continue to be a professional boxer if that's the case. So, I just thought the Vincent thing made it, you know, was huge in kind of making that a classic final, you know, to suffer that indignity, but yet it was such an, you know.
Yeah, Oscar De La Hoya said he feels Victor Ortiz should retire, and also he'd like three fingers of Maker's Mark and a glass of cool water, bartender. That was Oscar. You missed that later tweet. Yeah, Oscar De La Hoya is telling Victor Ortiz to retire.
And when he says bartender, it's kind of like in The Shining. He's actually at his house by himself. And
yeah, there's no bartender.
Not,
yeah. It's just, yeah, he's imagining a bartender. Yeah, I mean, I think that I had seen that, who was it? I believe it was Rich Murata and Al Bernstein seemed to kind of take the ribbing.
I don't know if it was Murata. I saw Bernstein was fuming at our boy Eric Raskin, who our one-time guest, but he know how he singled him out as being like the main culprit, but yeah, I saw Bernstein.
Well, I think probably Al just because he was more visible, you know, he's more visible than a lot of the, you know, no offense to the quote-unquote regular tweeters, but you know, that's how it goes in boxing and in other sports. You're not important unless somebody who is also important says you're important, basically.
That's true.
So I mean, I think that he was just visible. I don't know. It's kind of difficult for me to get up in arms considering that, you know, I'm making the jokes as well a lot of the time, so I can't really, I'm not going to criticize, and I'm not going to.
Well, that's Bernstein's boy, too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And
but the thing about it, Bernstein was like, oh, he only said it twice. I could have sworn it was like four times or something like that. But, you know,
I mean,
even twice is a little bit much. I mean, once is not that funny.
Yeah, but
because then you're that guy who's just, you know.
Yeah, well, I think that you were probably right about to say it, but it wasn't meant to be like we were like, oh, Barry Tompkins is a shitty broadcaster. It's just kind of the way things are on social media now. And I don't think anybody was calling for Barry Tompkins to be replaced or anything like that. It was just it was a pretty gentle ribbing, but I think when they see that, they take it differently.
Yeah, I think that the problem is like they don't understand the mystique of Ortiz. So I think that he took it as it was. I don't even think Vincent. We weren't making fun of Barry Tompkins. He was just kind of the messenger who gave us that gem. I think it was more. I think it was just more part of Ortiz. We would, you know, if he had made the mistake about some other fighter's name, but it's the fact that it was this. It's fucking Victor Ortiz, who's already like out, you know, totally out there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you throw
that
in
makes
the,
it
you know,
just more funny.
It was more about him. I think that. Than Tompkins, and they probably didn't get that.
I think they misunderstood what exactly was going on. Well, anyway, we're all like, you know, apologizing for Eric Raskin and shit. He, you know, if he wanted to apologize, he would, but regardless.
Yeah, I think last time I saw him, he told Bernstein to go fuck himself.
It just seemed a little much to me to get up in arms over it. It seemed, you know, a mite ridiculous, but whatever.
Yeah, it was kind of weak. But and then the other thing I thought was funny, unrelated, but when Bag Jr. Tweeted at Bernstein, like, hey, how many stanzas did Mo have Paulie winning against Broner?
Oh man, Bag is the ultimate instigator, and we love him.
Yeah, he's pretty funny.
Well, you had brought up a couple minutes ago before I started getting all Andrew Dice Clay on it that, you know, we were talking about Louis Collazo and what he should be doing. And it's only fair. I mean, he won. We should be talking about him, too. It wasn't just all about Victor Ortiz, and he's the one who made that big punch happen. I mean, yes, calling out Floyd Mayweather after the fight, it's a reach, needless to say. But I mean, you know, that what else is he going to do? Is he going to be like, yeah, come on, put me on Friday Night Fights. Come on, put me on Friday Night Fights.
right.
You know, it's not going to happen.
You know,
so obviously he's going to aim high.
He beat a relatively high-profile guy, even if he hadn't really, you know, boxed or been, you know, ranked as a boxer in a while. He's going to get something, and that's fair. I just don't think, you know, I heard people saying, hey, let's do, Sean Porter, Luis Collazo, and a Keith Thurman, Paulie Malignaggi doubleheader. Well, how about we just do Thurman and Porter? Since those guys actually, you know, beating like top 10 ranked guys right now. I mean,
yeah,
there's still something
the
to be
same
said.
Level,
that,
yeah,
that, you know, you should get those fights, to, not just because you're, oh, it's another name we can maneuver. I mean, I understand, like, why they do it. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing, I guess, Collazo and Malignaggi. I think that'd be an interesting boxing match. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was, you know, I guess you got to give him something for that. I mean, you know, he got a big win,
well,
and it was a knockout. And so he's going to get something, but I don't think he should be in the mix with the top guy, even the top 10 guys. And I consider
Malignaggi
slightly outside of that.
Well, that's I think, a pretty good call because, I mean, I haven't really seen it. That's probably been mentioned, but I haven't seen it been mentioned. And regardless, that would probably do pretty well at, like, a Barclays. You know, Judah Malignaggi.
That's like a poor man's Judah
well,
Malignaggi.
So.
Same premise.
So I think that could do well.
Yeah.
And that's probably right about where he could be realistically aiming, too.
I also thought Paulie looked kind of irked when Collazo called out Mayweather. You know, because I'm sure Paulie, and you know, deservedly so, but I would rate Paulie a little higher than Collazo at welterweight right now. So I just thought I kind of sensed that, like, you know, the boxer's pride of, like, this guy just knocked out Ortiz and he's calling out Mayweather, and Paulie seemed kind of disbelieving, you know.
Well, and yeah, I think that it was it might have been even the early makings of some type of grudge match or something, because if I'm not mistaken, they're both from Brooklyn, right? Or they
both
like rep Brooklyn or whatever. And so there's one thing, you know, Paulie might have been all, you know, pissy about him trying to rep Brooklyn while Paulie's, you know, over there. And then he also might have been thinking, yeah, you know, who the hell are you? You just one-shot at a dude that hasn't fought in a bit and, yeah, just had his jaw broken and shit, so why do I care? I don't know. Could be the makings of a grudge match down the road.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, boxing is obviously a very, you know, yeah, it could. I was just going to go back to saying, you know, I just think it's obviously such a really tough sport, and you just have to question. Don't you somewhat question whether Ortiz can do it anymore?
Yeah, I mean,
where it's actually worth doing it. I mean, it's like anybody can fight, you know, of course. Yeah, if Ortiz wanted to do some small-time shit, of course, yeah, he could still probably get a couple thousand people to come see him fight. But should he? I mean, does it seem like he has that mentality anymore? I don't know.
You know, if I were him, and I mean, knowing how fighters think and, you know, how they're just, for the most part, just never really want to give it up, regardless of where they are in their career. If I were him and I were trying to be smart about it, I'd be like, all right, well, you know, I guess I'll aim even lower than Louis Collazo and try to build myself back up in, like, you know, two or three fights and make one last go of it. And if that shit doesn't happen, then fine.
Yeah.
But past that, I mean, I don't even really know where he could be looking. You know, he's talking about rematching Floyd Mayweather a couple months ago and all this shit, and I'm just like, I mean,
and the crazy thing
really
is, he probably was
that?
Only one or two fights away from being able in a position to do that.
Serious.
You know,
yeah,
I mean, obviously he had to beat Collazo, but let's say that he beats Collazo,
yeah,
and then they put him in there with somebody, you know, like the Broner, Maidana, you know, if they end up rematching. Although we'll get into,
yeah,
I guess everything right now hinges on Floyd's little Facebook poll, right?
Yeah.
Which is fucking stupid. Which sucks, because, I mean, I don't know why, but I was still, like, holding some delusional hope that maybe there was, like, a mysterious third candidate that might emerge.
Well, I just have to add a little pause after you said Floyd Mayweather's poll, just because there are a lot of people on it currently.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, well, if it's between Amir Khan and Marcos Maidana, I mean, I don't really think that those are the limited options we have. Let's be more realistic. Floyd, with the money that he brings, can draw in more opponents than that. But if it's
well, he can fight whoever he wants. But it seems like he's
really
he's fighting.
But
yeah,
that's
I still
who he's more or less choosing.
Apparently,
so,
I mean, cause if you know, now that he has himself has said it. Then that I would assume that yeah that we really are only dealing with those two as opponents.
So between those two, for you, who?
Well, I'm kind of in the camp of like I think Maidana definitely deserves it more, but I might slightly lean towards Khan on which one I'd actually rather see. But I'm not really a huge fan of either matchup. I just think that there's better stuff out there, and now that Floyd's 36 years old and, you know, only going to fight once or twice a year, I'd like to see something, you know. I think that there's better guys. Even, you know, just even among just, like, the realistic options, you know, I'd rather see Danny Garcia, I guess Arislandi Lara, you know, I think is at 154 would be a better fight. And even at 147, you know, the guys like Keith Thurman and Sean Porter, I'd probably, you know, rather see one of those guys. Just because I feel like we've seen the kind of limits on Maidana and Khan. Now, at least Maidana can make the case that he, you know, just is coming off his biggest win. And he's been on a hot streak the last few fights. He's looked good. He's really kind of perfected his, like, brawler style and imposed himself on some tough guys with, you know, Josecito Lopez and Soto Karas and then beating Broner. I mean, I can understand the case there, and that is what deserves what I think probably should happen. But, you know, you can't get the picture of Devin Alexander basically shutting out Marcos Maidana. You just can't get that out of your mind and then think that the guy should, you know, is ready for a Floyd Mayweather fight. And when you really parse that resume, I mean, yeah, he did beat some tough guys, Josecito Lopez and Soto Karas, but those aren't world-class guys. And I think Broner is still a vastly unknown quantity at welterweight, you know, or at all. You know, he had never really fought. His one significant fight was Paul Malignaggi, and he didn't stop him like the other elite fighters who'd fought Malignaggi did, including Khan at one point. So I don't know. You know, it's just like I'm not a fan of either. And then Khan, of course, it's just because he's got knocked out by Danny Garcia, and he hasn't done anything to reestablish himself on the highest level.
Yeah,
so I think the arguments against both are strong. Maidana deserves it way more. I guess I just feel like, you know, maybe Khan has more speed and more variables that we haven't seen Floyd fight against. You know, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I definitely have my bias here, and that's factoring into my decision between the two or my pick between the two. But I'd like to see the Maidana fight if it's between the two, just because, you know, I do agree with what you're saying, and I think that stylistically Amir Khan could really present some challenges to Floyd early on, like in the first few rounds, literally. But my issue is that when Floyd starts dialing in, which he inevitably always does against every opponent, the only one I can think of that he didn't really do it against was Jose Luis Castillo in the first fight, and he kind of did off and on. Regardless, when he eventually kind of hones in, Amir Khan's going to be gone. I can't think of any other outcome, really. Amir Khan's chin is not going to stand up to what Floyd Mayweather brings. He's not going to stand up to Floyd hitting him right on the chin, like, you know, 15 times around. So I just think that basically my argument is that I would pick Maidana to stay around longer and thus be around to try harder. Like in later rounds, even though he's probably never going to touch Floyd's chin, he's probably never going to get, you know, get inside on him the way that he wants to. Pause.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably choose Maidana. I don't know.
And he
deserves it, kind of like you said.
You know, weird thing, man. I don't like either fight, but I guess I don't really hate either fight. because I guess I'm kind of getting in the mindset of it's going to happen anyway, so might as well accept it. I mean, I think the thing about Khan, I like that he does have that like that arrogant swagger in the ring, and even though at times bordering on delusional, but we know that the guy is not going to he's not. You would just think from past experience that he's not going, if he does get hurt, he's going to give Floyd like every chance to finish that job. He's not going to go into a shell and not fight. I mean, he's going to keep fighting until he gets stopped, if that's the case. And, with his hand speed, early on and before Floyd kind of figures out timing and settles into a rhythm, maybe there could be some interesting moments. I mean, you heavily favor Floyd for obvious reasons. And I think you'd heavily favor a lot of people against Khan, for obvious reasons. I mean, would anybody pick Khan to beat Danny Garcia in a rematch at this point? So, I mean, I think Khan's even become slightly like underrated because of how bad he's looked against Julio Diaz. But, I don't hate it. There's a couple interesting things. I think Khan's a different style than Canelo and Guerrero. We would at least see some different stuff. And Maidana, like, you're right, man. I mean, the dude's not going to quit, and I just don't see Floyd being able to knock Maidana out. So I think he'll be coming for him for 12 rounds, and he's obviously got power. And who knows? I think he has outside of Garcia. I mean, beating Broner was big, and it should get him into something, and get him a big payday. But sucks. Because I think, I hate to say it, but I mean, I just think the fight right now, the fight with, Bradley and Pacquiao is two guys in a much higher class than Khan and Maidana.
I'll keep repeating it. I'll crack out my pound for pound list again, but I don't give a shit if a guy's total, the upper limits of the pound for pound list, or if he's, 10 on the pound for pound list or 20 or whatever. If he's fighting once or twice a year, it needs to be really good. That's it. There's no like addendum to that. There's no asterisk. There's nothing else. If a guy's fighting that seldom, it needs to be really good. And I just feel like, I don't really have a super great, two sentence counter argument to, well, who else is he going to fight? Or who else is blah, blah, blah? Or who else would you favor to beat him anyway? Because he beat everybody, so he doesn't need to fight him, I don't really have a great, really short argument, to counteract that. The point is that if he's going to be fighting like this, it needs to be better. The Canelo thing, great. But that was, that was already 5 months ago. And he's still not going to get into the ring for another three months.
Canelo was great fight. And at the time, he's regarded one of the best fighters at 154, and we didn't know, there was a lot we didn't know. But we've seen, the biggest piece of evidence here is what Danny Garcia did to Amir Khan and what Devin Alexander did to Maidana.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, Maidana has a case that he's improved and that was just a really bad night, and now he's with Robert Garcia. Okay, I mean, I get that. I'd still be somewhat skeptical of it, but, man, it's just like the situation he's in right now is he's like, atop the welterweight division. Seems like he wants to have a couple fights there after going up to fight Canelo. But the problem is like there are two, really world class fighters in his division right behind there with Manny Pacquiao and Tim Bradley. And then you've got, in the division below, Danny Garcia has established himself and he's the legit champion. And, the guy has really, I think Danny should be right on the fringe of like a pound for pound type of list. And then you got Arislandi Lara at 154, who's, become regarded as like another, really solid boxer and really tough, opponent in that weight area. But behind those guys, that whole field at welterweight, you've got guys like Maidana and Khan, and then you've got younger guys who haven't quite, like Thurman and Porter, who just haven't done enough yet to really mandate that kind of a fight. So I don't know. I think outside of those four, it's fair to kind of criticize. If he's not going to fight, I mean, I understand. Okay, Pacquiao and Bradley are with top rank, but if he's not going to fight Danny or Lara, you know, or somebody like Porter or Thurman, who's at least undefeated, then I don't know. I think he deserves to be criticized.
Yeah,
somewhat.
I agree 100%. I mean, yeah. Yes.
But at the same time, I mean, if he fights Maidana, if he does fight Maidana, I think that's somewhat. I mean, I think you could probably make a case that Maidana deserves to be ranked right with Thurman and Porter. So it's not like one is that great of a fight. It's just kind of like stylistically we've already seen, Maidana look really bad against a boxer who's not as good as Floyd.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, he's already been fighting. You know, he was a medalist in the 1996 Olympics. So this is not like, you know, it's not like he's only been a pro for a couple years or something like that. He just hasn't had a very busy schedule as a fighter. And when a guy is like this and he's in his prime and, you know, he's just the type of fighter that when he's on and when he's quick and popping, he's such a joy to watch, literally. I mean, you know, I know a lot of people don't like him. I don't even like a lot of things about him. But when he is Floyd Mayweather inside the ring and doing what he does, he's a pleasure to watch. And it sucks to only see a guy like that, a guy with that level of talent and a guy with the opportunity to do what he could have done in boxing, not do it. That sucks, man. I hate seeing that. It's like when Roy Jones was going on that absolutely just, oh, man, just that horrible run in like the late 90s and early 2000s that was like, this is such a waste. You know, just seeing a guy with that type of talent fight, this is not that level. It's not like Floyd's fighting total scrubs or anything like that, but the what could have been factor is still there. It sucks. Anyway.
Well, especially in this recent comeback, you know, I think the only fighter who may end up being remembered or notable on this run, you know, assuming he fights Conor Maidana next, then, you know, I think maybe Canelo would stand out depending on what he can do for the rest of his career. But, you know, it'll be obvious that he fought older, the best fighters like Mosley and Cotto. It'll be obvious that he fought, you know, older versions of them. Guys like Ortiz and Guerrero and, you know, Maidana or Khan are probably not going to go down as all-time greats. So, yeah, it does kind of suck.
It is what it is. It's boxing.
He's still fighting on a world-class level, you know, and he's beating. I mean, even a guy like Maidana and Khan, you're not going to go too far down the rankings. I mean, I think Maidana's probably established himself as a real top 10 welterweight. Khan isn't. But talent-wise, you know, he'd probably be somewhere in the top 20 at least. And, you know, maybe if he's not completely damaged, you know, he could do something. But you'd just like to see, like, you know, it's totally different cases. I mean, but, you know, like a guy like Amir Khan, you'd just like to see him, like, actually get in the mix and win some significant fights. I mean, put him against guys like Sean Porter. I mean, they just had the same common opponent with Julio Diaz, you know. That's a fight that would tell us a lot. Especially, you know, Prime Khan and Porter, I mean, that would be a really good fight. But
yeah,
to have him just leapfrog everybody and just get the Mayweather fight, it just doesn't, you know, it's not deserved at all. Maidana, okay, like he did just beat, and they'll play up all those angles. They can play up the fact that, you know, Broner is Mayweather's, like, protege. I mean, I think that's how they're going to have to promote it. Because Maidana's personality and, you know, might be kind of a tough sell to the mainstream. The fact he's not very popular, speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, I think Khan would be an easier sell as far as like promotional shows, like, you know, if they do the All Access stuff. But you know, the Maidana's got some the Broner subplot, you know, avenging his little brother.
Yeah, there's something there. And like you said a couple minutes ago. Well, you said a couple minutes ago that it's in terms of, you know, who's most deserving, or if there's any type of, like, you know, cosmic justice, who gets that fight. You know, I guess it would be Maidana before almost anybody.
Well, I think the number one guy would, if anybody, would be like Danny Garcia from all those Golden Boy guys. Just because, but I've also read stories that the Garcia camp didn't want the Mayweather fight, or they kind of pulled themselves out of the running for it. But you know, if they did want that fight, I think they should have gotten it just because, I mean, he basically fought the guy everyone thought was a monster in Matisse on Mayweather's undercard. So if he really did want the Mayweather fight and then they give him that, you know, and he goes out and does what he did there, I think you'd have to give him the Mayweather fight. But, you know, maybe maybe the stories are true. Maybe he did say, okay, I'm going to move up gradually to welterweight, or I'm going to, you know, defend at 140 one time. I guess his fight just got made.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, speaking of Danny Garcia, yeah, he's going to be going up against Mauricio Herrera. We talked about that, like, either last week or the week before. He's going to be fighting him in Puerto Rico. When is it going to be? April?
I think March 15th or something.
Something like that. I mean, so it's not like, you know, it's 6 months away or something like that. But still, I think it's a little underwhelming, needless to say, following up on the performance against Matisse. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, I agree with you. I mean, you'd think that Garcia has kind of already proven that he's in a different class than Herrera and that that's how the fight will play out. And, you know, unless there's just a major shock, I mean, there's no reason to think otherwise, which is not the best way to look forward to, you know, seeing a guy in the ring again. But we're kind of, you know, it's not like it's unheard of. I mean, it's pretty much what we say every, you know, Gennady Golovkin fight, Mikey Garcia, you know. So I think Danny, you know, of all the guys, he's been in some tough matchups, well, at least one. That's the thing with Garcia. They always say, like, he wins when he's not supposed to win. But really, that only happened, like, maybe twice. You know? I mean, he definitely beat Khan as an underdog, but...
yeah.
And he beat Matisse, but...
Well, I don't know.
It's not like he's been defying the odds forever. I mean, he was a pretty, you know, pretty highly regarded prospect.
Yeah, I remember seeing him fight Kendall Holt on the, I believe it was the Hopkins-Dawson one.
Yeah, that
card
was terrible.
That was a total, like, waste of life. And, that was not a good fight. I remember kind of, like, watching it and going, like, oh, this is the guy with all the hype behind him. I mean, he's kind of struggling with Kendall Holt, who himself looks like he's struggling.
Yeah.
You know, like, just struggling, keeping up appearances and shit. So,
that was bad,
yeah,
and
I remember
the first fight against Eric Morales. Morales was having a lot of moments of success against him.
Yeah, without that late rally by Garcia, it looked like Morales was surging and was going to take the fight.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know.
Yeah, so I think that's why, you know, he was such a huge underdog against Khan.
Yeah.
Because I think he was like an 8-1 underdog or something like that.
And kind of fairly enough, you know, judging by previous performances, but... All I know is
and
that,
judging by
you know,
the first two rounds, where Max Kellerman was pretty much ready for the Garcia corner to, like, throw in the towel.
No shit. Well, with this Herrera business, I don't know, but I think the Fratellis might be kicking him out of the Latin Goonies sometime soon.
Well, I don't know. Well, it's not really something, you know, it's not the highlight of the boxing schedule. That's for sure.
It'll probably be the highlight of boxing fashion, though.
It actually, you know, yeah, there will be that, but it also actually probably could be a pretty good fight, even though I think it'll be kind of one-sided.
Herrera's
think about the styles, it actually probably will be a good, it could look something like, you know, Alvarado and Herrera, only with Danny being a little bit more, you know, patient, but probably landing some big shots.
Yeah, I think that Garcia is probably going to be able to counter Herrera, like, pretty readily, I think. But Herrera's not going to come to lose, that's for sure. I can't think of a time where I've seen him fight, and it's not like I've followed him his entire career, but I've seen him fight, I don't know, maybe a half dozen times, and every time he brings it, he comes to fight. So I don't think it's going to be, like, a boring fight or anything. I just don't think that he's quite in Danny Garcia's league. And Ryan Bivens just tweeted us, after Canelo and Broner blew up, Golden Boy needs at least one guy to stand beaten, and that's Danny Garcia. That's kind of a fair
point,
too. Actually, I mean, we've been singing the praises of Golden Boy for, I don't know, our entire lives on this show because we want jobs there, Golden Boy. But, you know, yes, they have kind of, in a way, I mean, they put together some good fights. There have been some really good cards, et cetera, had really nice numbers. But as far as the actual stable goes, Broner had a tough loss where he was, I think it turned out that his jaw, like, wasn't broken or something like that, but, you know, he got shaken up pretty good. Canelo got basically, you know, the wool got pulled off of him, you know, against Floyd Mayweather.
I don't know that the whole undefeated thing necessarily is going to play a big role, but it's a decent point.
Well, yeah. I mean, actually, I was thinking that the other day, too. Like, they've – a lot of their best young fighters who were undefeated took their first loss. Like, Abner Mares, too. And there was some other guy.
Yep.
I'm trying to think.
Abner Mares and – you know, they were looking at Gary Russell Jr. for a while, and he's not exactly, panning out.
He could still pan out, maybe.
He could, but, I mean, you can't be prospect of the year for like a half dozen years in a row,
Yeah. I don't know what to believe, you know, because I've read some stories like a couple months after Mayweather-Canelo that said that Danny Garcia's camp had passed on the Mayweather fight. Or not, you know, not that it was offered to him, but like, you know, took themselves out of the running, said that they didn't want it yet. And it kind of made sense just because I think a loss to Mayweather, you know, it can be pretty debilitating to a career. I mean, I think it definitely set Canelo back as far as, you know, it just the way he's viewed from, you know, as a serious fighter. I mean, he's going to need to, I think, win a couple fights, you know, more than just beat Angulo to really get back to where he was. And, you know, I think the same thing with Danny Garcia. You're trying to build a young, undefeated guy. Maybe their team understands that economically it might be better to take a few more fights. And there's no real reason. You know, I mean, he's not a welterweight contender yet. You know, he's still just the champion at 140. So it's not like, you know, oh, he has to fight Mayweather. You know, he's not, like, ducking anyone. He's the champion in his own division. And he fought the toughest, you know, the universally regarded toughest contender. So...
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's also a fair point, too, because he's not old. He's fairly young. He's got time ahead of him, and I would definitely not fever him against Floyd Mayweather. I think he would lose that fight.
And if he keeps winning, he'll always have the Mayweather fight, or at least if some crazy thing happens and somebody upsets Mayweather, he'll have that fight, you know? But if he keeps winning and he's the guy at 140, he's always going to be able to go up and fight whoever the biggest name at 147.
And I do think that he's sitting fairly pretty, you know. I mean, he's not where Floyd Mayweather is as far as being able to demand just about any fight that he wants. But he has a lot of options. 140 still has a fair amount of fighters, and 147 does too. And with him being young, and he could still grow into another division or eat himself into another division, whatever. He does have a number of options. So. Yeah, I think that's kind of the flip side of the coin there.
And it seems like the promoters support him a lot, you know, and they've put a lot of weight behind him and given him some good opportunities. And, you know, ever since he beat Khan, they've treated him, you know, like a legitimate A-side, even though we're kind of skeptical. But I think that the way he performed against Matisse, you know, he's kind of earned the right for that. Although I think it is pretty bizarre that they're doing this fight down in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it, I guess, but I don't know if they're really going to embrace Danny Garcia the way, you know, fighters born who are actually born on the island were embraced.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, shit. Maybe they're trying to now they're trying to go for a big Colazzo Garcia fight. In the next, I don't know, year in Puerto
yeah.
Rico.
Well, maybe they just wanted to have fights down in Puerto Rico, and they just thought Garcia was the best name that they had. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of crowd that they get, what kind of atmosphere they have down there. I'm sure it'll be good.
Yeah, I mean,
Puerto Rico,
we'll
it's, you know.
Goes.
Yeah.
Shit, I'd fucking love to go to Puerto Rico for a fight. I wouldn't really give a shit what fight it is, but...
Just shoot Starks an email, man. I'm sure the TQBR could cover the flight and the hotel and get a ringside pass.
Probably. I think so. Yeah, I think we had enough
it seems like
revenue
a reasonable
last year. Yeah, and we had enough ad revenue last year, I think. Well, I'll look
for
into
sure.
it. I'll shoot an email. It's big business. talking about speaking of guys who Floyd Mayweather is never going to fight, so they basically finalized Tim Bradley versus Manny Pacquiao too, and also I read this on a few different sites, but notably Bad Left Hook, just because I don't know, I visit it just about every day just to read stuff because I like Scott's take on a lot of different topics, and I think he's funny. But they also basically finalized the undercard. And aside from one fight that I'm interested in, the undercard kind of looks kind of shitty. And on top of that, well, the follow-up story on that is that Bob Arum was like, yeah, it does, and nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, you know,
so anyway,
the fucked up thing is, like, well, I think some of what he says is probably right. I don't know. You know, if you're dealing with a huge fight like a Mayweather-Canelo, I agree. I think I don't think the undercard matters. I mean, I you know, what did Mayweather-Canelo do? Like 2-point-something million? What was it, like 2.1?
A lot. Yeah.
You know, I mean, how much of that was, you know, how many of those buys wouldn't have ordered if it wasn't, you know, a strong undercard with Garcia Matisse? I mean, at most,
probably
like, what, 50,000, 100,000? I mean, it has to be narrow.
Yeah, about a lot.
The craziest boxing, you know. But smaller cards where they might only be getting a few hundred thousand views or buys, and, you know, man, especially with Pacquiao's numbers being so bad against Rios, I mean, that shocked me, you know, that fight did so poorly. I mean, like, there was just, I don't know if it was, you know, the promotion was bad. I mean, I think everything, I thought the, you know, 24/7 was fine. I thought, you know, it was an intriguing story just to see how would he respond to being knocked out. Although in boxing, you know, usually you end up with stuff like, you know, Roy Jones and Glenn Johnson or Roy Jones and Tarver 3, you know, or just either really bad fights or guy just no longer has a chin. But I thought maybe, you know, that could do 700, 800 buys, like kind of the low range of what he's done in recent years, but did like 300 or 350 or something from what I read. So, like, you know, if you're dealing with that small of a number, I think the undercards do matter, because if they can push 50 to 100,000 buys or something like that among real hardcore boxing fans, I mean, then it becomes like a real significant percentage of the total number. So, I mean, I don't know. I think in general, Arum's probably right when he's talking about major pay-per-views, but if you're looking at the you know, the ones like that are like, you know, in the somewhere around 500,000 or less, you know, the guys like Cotto Martinez will probably be one of those, but, you know, like Cotto Margarito 2 and the non-Mayweather, the non, like, you know, Pacquiao, the million-dollar-plus ones, I think the undercard's really important, because you're not really selling those, you're selling those to the boxing fan. And especially now with, like, more options available to, you know, catch fights, although don't let Kevin Ioli hear you say it, but I think the undercards do matter, man. Because it's tough to pay $75 to watch one fight, or $70 or $65 or whatever it is. You know, it's hard to do that for one fight. And if you're getting a whole quality card, that might be what it takes to sway you to say, all right, I'm going to do it legit. I want to watch it on HD. You know, I want to have people over, whatever. As opposed to just like, you know, going to turn on the laptop and whatever happens to pop up in the browser, so be it.
Look, James, if you can't afford to drop $700 a month on boxing, then you're a fucking scumbag, okay?
You're right. Well,
so
especially, you know, you do the math on pay-per-view. I mean, if they have, like, let's say, you know, six semi-major pay-per-views this year, I mean, it is like $400.
And that's not even, you know, that's if you're not even going to live fights. That's if you don't subscribe to HBO. I mean, look, dude.
Exactly.
They have really good programming, and yeah, I mean, you know, they have really good programming and whatnot. But I don't know that I would even have HBO if I weren't a boxing fan.
Oh,
and
dude,
it's nothing against
HBO. Game of Thrones.
But I could download that shit. I literally could download that. I mean, you know, I'm just speaking, you know, logistically, I could download all of these things. It's the boxing that I have an issue with, because yeah, I could watch streams and shit. But what if the stream cuts out and I'm going to get suicidal? And no, I want to watch those things live on my television.
Yeah.
So, I mean, regardless, the point is just that it's not cheap to be a boxing fan, you know? And so, yeah, that mindset that they just want you to put down more money and more money and more money and more money is a little bit ridiculous, really. I mean, we should be getting, you know, we should just be kind of thrown a bone every so often, I think, for basically keeping the sport alive. We had a good 2013.
The other thing is, like, how hard is it really to, like, make some decent, you know, I mean, this is a little bit better effort from Top Rank, I guess, and you know, I think Golden Boy right now has just a way deeper stable, so they can make better, you know, multi-fight cards, but still, it's I can't even remember what the undercard was. I remember I read it, and I don't even remember what fights are on it. But it is better than the Tim Bradley Marquez undercard and the Pacquiao Rios undercard. But it's still nothing to be, like, you know, hugely excited about. And I think you got it. Go ahead.
I was going to say you're lucky because I wrote down exactly what the undercard was going to be. It's Khabib, Alek Verdiev versus Jesse Vargas.
Okay.
Raymundo Beltran versus Rocky Martinez, which is actually the fight I was talking about that I'm interested in and want to see because
fight.
I like Beltran. Martinez is a scrappy dude. They're probably both. I think that Beltran's probably on a higher level, but they're both kind of near the same level. And Brian Vasquez versus Jose Felix Jr. That's the pay-per-view. And so that's pretty much what. I mean, all right. So Bob Arum said he's basically what he said was that fans don't care what the undercard is. Not necessarily that it doesn't matter. So I mean, let's say that we'll be.
Well, that's not obviously not true. I mean, there's no point in you know even like.
Yeah, it's not true, but let's be cynical for a moment and say, yeah, it is kind of true in a way, somewhat, that fans don't really care what the undercard is. So let's say if that is true, how would we go about changing that, though? Or at the very least, how would we go about changing the mindset that that's what they think about us? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. I don't think he necessarily even does think that that's true. You know, I think that Arum just says a lot of stuff that's, you know, questionable. But the guy who shows up to the pay-per-view party and is there to, like, you know, drink and mingle with people and, you know, that guy doesn't give a shit what the undercards of pay-per-views are because they're probably only going to be in the room for the main event. You know, and I think that is – so what he said is true, I guess, if you're using – you know, if he's talking about fans in the sense of, like, mainstream fans who, you know, might turn up for a big event like Mayweather Canelo or something like that, yeah, he's right. But if he's talking about boxing fans, then, like, it's not even worth, you know, arguing over that because obviously, yeah, anyone would, like, hey, would you – you're going to sit there and watch boxing for 4 hours. Do you want a good undercard or a shitty undercard?
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
really,
I mean, so it's like, yeah, of course, but they care if they want better undercards. But if he's talking about does the undercard affect the buy rate, I mean, then it's like a little bit more complicated. And I would say, like, yeah, it probably does to a very, you know, small degree. So I think it becomes, like, you know, more significant when the event is, you know, the smaller the event, the stronger you would want the undercard to be.
And maybe it's just the altruist, the philanthropist in me talking, but I just feel like when you're dealing with this type of money, the type of money that they're dealing with for large undercards, which is in the millions of dollars, needless to say, and even more for anything that Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather are involved in, you know, the tens of millions of dollars. When you're dealing with that type of money, I mean, the bulk of the money that they have in hand is going to be going towards promotion, advertising, and the purses for the main event. The purses for the undercard are such a small fraction. Unless they're big names, they're such a small fraction of what they're actually using. It feels like to me, like, why not, like, kick in a couple extra bucks and get good fighters or something? It just feels like, why not? There's no reason not to. But, I think that you're right. And it's Bob Arum basically excusing doing it. It's not so much that he thinks that we don't care necessarily, but it's basically just him excusing them from doing it, you know, or for doing it.
Well, I think it would, because I have a lot of friends who are, you know, all different levels of fandom to boxing. You know, people who only know a few of the big names, you know, to all the way to people who, you know, regularly watch every HBO and Showtime broadcast and know most of the, you know, more prominent fighters. And, you know, the people I talk to, I mean, I know it's a big selling point. Like, something like Danny Garcia, Lucas Matisse, being on that undercard was huge. Not that we wouldn't have bought it or watched it anyway, but just to get, you know, more excited, more fired up, and feeling, like, more positive about it. And it turned out it was a really good fight, and by far the best fight on that card. You know, and a lot of people, you know, whatever, if the main event wasn't competitive, I mean, Danny Garcia having that kind of breakout performance was one of the, you know, most positive things you could take from it. And I just think, like, if Golden Boy was willing to put those guys, where they could have definitely sold that fight to Showtime for, you know, multi-million dollar license fee. I mean, it was a really hot fight in boxing at the time, and Garcia was one of their young stars. If they were willing to, you know, take that risk and put that on that card, and I really believe that that wasn't some calculated play to, like, make more money. I mean, I think that a big reason that was on that card was to promote the brand and promote Danny Garcia, you know, and give them a better showcase on an event that so many people would be watching. And if they're willing to do that,
it was a risk.
Yeah, and there's risk on it too, you know. But like, if, you know, I don't see why we can't get, you know, one of Top Rank's better names on, like, a Pacquiao undercard. And I'm trying to remember the last time that there was a decent Pacquiao undercard with, like, a real legit, you know, somebody who you could compare to Danny Garcia. Like somebody like Mikey Garcia. Or, you know, or Nonito Donaire, or any guys. You know,
a fight on that level, period.
Yeah, just a fight you like that. I mean, a fight with one of Top Rank's, like, world-class guys. Because I know that helps, you know, like, hey, selling those just amongst friends. You know, like, who's going to be, you know, people who are, you know, possibly curious to, like, come over, who are more casual boxing fans, and be like, what's the undercard look like? Oh, Nonito Donaire's on it. You know, and that name means something. I mean, in boxing, like, it's like the Mike Tyson Lennox Lewis pay-per-view proved. You know, it's all about name recognition. That's, like, the most significant thing with fans. That's why Mayweather Pacquiao will always be huge. You know, it's just, and I just, it'd be nice if Top Rank would toss some real names that people have seen. You know, guys who they put on HBO, put them on one of these pay-per-views. Because this will be the third one in a row that's overall, you know, Rocky Martinez, the guy who just got knocked out by Garcia.
Yeah,
and then
Garcia.
You know, and Beltran, hey, it's great. Beltran's got a TV spot. I'm not saying that. I mean, I like that guy, and I think he got screwed against Ricky Burns. But, you know, I just like to see one of Top Rank's, you know, premier young fighters get a showcase the way that Golden Boy gave Danny that showcase. I mean, a fight like Mikey Garcia and Gamboa, I think that'd be perfect on the Pacquiao undercard.
Well, more or less, they're pretty much just making the main event and kind of, like, letting that promote itself. Because they're not really there's nothing to do. I mean, there's nothing to sell on the undercard. There's not even really anything to sell about the main event, because what Tim Bradley's done in the meantime kind of sells itself, you know? So, yeah, it feels like a bit of a half-assed move by Top Rank to do that. But, all right, I think we're back in the good graces of Golden Boy again. I think that we'll probably get the jobs if we apply again.
Well, I thought you said Schaefer was your uncle.
More or less. Oh. More or less. Yeah. Well, you know, actually speaking about undercards, because I think Mr. Bivens kind of reminded me, but I had also written it down, Daniel Ponce de Leon versus Juan Manuel Lopez is actually going to be happening on that Garcia Herrera.
Oh, the Gamboa?
In Puerto Rico.
Oh, the Danny Garcia Wait, it is? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Said. And I actually didn't even see the date or anything like that when I had read that it was going and that it was going to happen and everything. So Corey Kitchen said it. It wasn't Bivens. It was your other colleague, Corey Kitchen, who also writes for Bad Left Hook. He's the one who said it. So if he's wrong, blame him. But no, I actually didn't even read where it was taking place or when. When I saw that it was taking place, I was just kind of like, damn, that's crazy that, you know, Daniel Ponce de Leon was knocked out in the first fight. And, I mean, it wasn't like he was straight up put to sleep, but he was knocked out. He was caught big. He was hurt. And so then now we're going into a second fight. And granted, it's a few years later, but I think that just about everybody would pretty much favor Ponce de Leon at this point.
It's weird. It's a weird situation. But yeah, I agree completely. And it's one of these fights where when you first hear it, I'm kind of like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But then think about it, and I just don't really want to see Lopez continue fighting. I mean, the guy has just taken such a battering in his last three fights, or at least the last three, you know, more prominent fights against Salido twice and against Mikey, and he just exhibits a lot of really troubling, you know, we've seen him, you know, beaten to the point where his body is convulsing, you know, literally shaking, you know, and he just no longer seems able to defend himself. It doesn't seem like he has the same kind of quickness in, you know, to be, you know, to just overpower people with the offensive output. So I don't even know if you can say, like, well, he's a big puncher. He's still got a puncher's chance, because I don't know if he even is capable of the same kind of power that he used to have. So I think you would have to favor Ponce de Leon big time in this, and I think it's probably going to end up, you know. I mean, best case, maybe Wanma can land a bomb or two and shake up De Leon, and then De Leon will come back and knock him out, and it'll be exciting and there's some drama. But I think that, you know, more likely it just ends up with Lopez kind of taking another beating.
Well, I mean, I really only have two questions in regards to this fight. And the first question is, can they find a referee that'll gamble on the fight beforehand so Wanma has a built-in excuse? And the second question is, can Ponce de Leon please just stop clubbing women over the head and dragging them back to his cave? I mean, I'm getting a little sick of this caveman act. It's kind of
well, as long as, yeah, and also, can we have another, HBO documentary piece about his upbringing and how he grew up on the side of a cave? Because that's always pretty awesome.
Yeah, they have those cave drawings. Those are about Daniel Ponce de Leon.
And have Lampley, like, you know, on the verge of tears talking about de Leon's tribe.
Yeah, and then have Larry Merchant do a special guest appearance so that he can make an uncouth reference to some crazy metaphor about his upbringing, like he grew up in some rock lily pad rice paddy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it'd be solid. Be awesome.
I'd like that. It's, I feel bad for Wanma Lopez because I'm a fan of his. He seems like a good dude. He's a fun fighter. But, yeah, he just doesn't seem to have much punch resistance at all at this point. And, I mean, if you would have looked at the time that they fought and the kind of career trajectory of both fighters and how they related to each other, it seemed pretty clear to me, or at least at the time, that Daniel Ponce de Leon was on the slide. You know, he kind of had done everything that he could do in the sport. He was a limited dude who walked forward and threw bombs, but kind of had some chin and stamina issues, and that was that. And Wanma Lopez was going up. That dude was going to be a star because he was knocking motherfuckers out, and he seemed to be very popular in Puerto Rico, which is just kind of a, you know, the Puerto Rican fans are rabid in a good way. They really support Puerto Rican fighters, and it seemed like, you know, the sky was the limit, but then a handful of fights later, Orlando Salido basically ruined Wanma Lopez in those two fights. I mean, those two really good fights. So yeah. I feel bad for the guy because, yeah.
Amazing,
really
amazing
question,
fight.
Yeah, I got to question whether or not he really should be going on. And usually I'm kind of like when talk like that about a fighter's career starts arising, I just roll my eyes and I'm like, yeah, you know, everybody's telling everybody to retire. I get it. But in this case, it does kind of make me wonder.
Yeah. But who knows?
Yeah,
I don't know, man. I mean, yeah, I'm always more inclined to, put up the caution flag there after a couple of really kind of, you know, rough. I mean, the Salido fights were awesome, but they were also pretty brutal. And by the end of the second one, I think it was obvious that Lopez had very little, you know, left. The fight with Garcia, it was just so, you know, completely one-sided, and it was kind of just, there was just this impending doom the entire time. I mean, he pretty much knew that it was just a matter of time until he was going to get hit with some huge punch that really fucked him up, and it did. And it's not like he's going quiet, like he, you know, when he gets hurt, I mean, he's like, his whole body twitches, and it's uncomfortable to watch. And so I think all of it just creates this sense of, like, dude, you know, you're done, you know, I mean, it sucks, but, because a man's got to earn a living, but same time, he's just becoming painful to watch. And I think even the fans in Puerto Rico, from what I saw the Leon Love Garcia fight, I think if he keeps, you know, getting violently knocked out in these, you know, fights, that's going to dwindle too, to the point where it probably won't be worth it.
Well, my rough guesstimate would be that his family probably doesn't want to sit ringside and watch him get the shit kicked out of him anymore. Just a guess. You know, I don't think I want to see any shots of, you know, anybody in his family, like, weeping. Yeah, weeping as he's getting his ass kicked anymore, because we've already seen it. Like,
you know, like the Showtime split-screen, like, human suffering cam?
No, it just I don't think anything could ever top in, you know, I apologize, but both a good way and bad way after Pacquiao got knocked out, them panning over to Bob and Jinky, and Jinky's like damn near fainting like a Beatles fan, and Bob's like holding her up. I was just like, oh my God.
That was brutal.
Tops that.
The other one was when they in Mayweather Guerrero, you know, like in between rounds, they did the shot of like Guerrero's wife in like one side of the screen, like reacting to, and then the other half was like this like punt, you know, Guerrero's face just getting turned around, you know. It's just like, all right, that's kind of unnecessary. You know, she's like shielding their son's eyes from it.
Yeah, no shit. Like,
pretty sure that was like a direct order from Stephen Espinoza on that one. Guys, I want to see more
more human suffering. Yeah, that. Oh man,
that was rough.
Yeah, it was brutal. Well, you know, I wish both those guys luck, because I do like both those guys. But yeah, needless to say, I think that we got the feeling that Muhammad Lopez is going to get shit kicked here. I hope not, but I feel like he is. Oh man, and you know what? We totally skipped over. Before we hop out of here, we'll probably end this early today, but you know what we totally skipped over was Gennady Golovkin fighting this past weekend. Did you catch that at all?
Well, I mean, I couldn't legally watch it in the U.S., so I'm actually, somebody's mailing me a DVD of it. So I'll probably be able to watch it in like 2 weeks. Because I just had it, you know.
FedEx?
But actually, to be honest with you, I did not catch it. Not because I wasn't willing to, but I just ended up not being around, I think, when it was going on. I tried to catch it, and I came too late. Oop. I tried to catch it, but I was thinking it would be on at, like, you know, my time, which usually, like, the events in, I guess I didn't realize, like, maybe Monaco's in a different time zone or something, but the fight, or maybe it was just earlier in the day there, but it seemed like it happened like 2 hours before I thought it was going to happen, so I missed it.
I think it was in Spanish. Yeah.
Yeah, it was in, yeah. That, so.
Yeah.
I did read all the results and stuff, but anything worthy?
Not particularly. I mean,
that's pretty amazing, though. He knocked out the granite-chinned Osamanu Adama. Do you think we should move him up
right
to number one pound for pound?
I don't know. I'm going to have to plug that into the logarithm and see what spits out, because I'm not sure.
Well, actually, so it wasn't really a knockout. It was a technical accumulation kind of thing.
Yeah, it was pretty much saving the dude from himself.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was
actually,
was
that dude does have a crazy chin, I think.
Well, he was scrappy, and he was taking some shots, and he was actually, you know, nailing Golovkin in return. Pause. But, yeah, it wasn't a bad fight, and I think that in terms of like excitement or entertainment, it was probably better than a lot of people, you know, thought it would be beforehand. A lot of people were like,
fucking
Gennady Golovkin, you know, he's taking on some dude, blah blah blah. Why isn't he fighting Martina? I saw that all over. You know,
how would you
like
compare him to like the Curtis Stevens in terms of just competitiveness, or because I thought that was more than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I think that actually it was kind of similar in that I think the only question that I walk away from that fight with, and needless to say, just like many people, I like Golovkin. He's fun to watch. He hits hard. He's funny. You know, he seems like he has a pretty quirky, funny personality and whatnot. But I do kind of walk away from both of those fights with a slight question about what happens if someone who can hit really hard hits him. Because, I mean, Stevens can punch a little bit, but he's not a huge middleweight, and, you know, he's kind of a little guy, and he also kind of had an issue reaching to land on Golovkin. Although when he did, there was like one or two punches where he landed and Golovkin kind of just froze up for just a second. Like, he was kind of like, whoa, he hit me. And it kind of happened again against Adama, where he got hit, and it was just for a moment there, like he almost didn't really know what to do, although instinct kicked in pretty quickly and he started throwing. But still, it just kind of makes me wonder if a guy who can really bang steps in there and hits him. I don't know what's going to happen, but
yeah.
Regardless, even if that doesn't happen, I think the point is that
he deserves to be in the real title picture, which is Sergio Martinez, and that doesn't really look like it's going to happen for a long time. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what else could be expected of him at this point. You know, I don't really – I know that there's a lot of – it seems like there's a lot of complaints about his level of opposition and, like, he should have fought this guy instead of this guy. He should be fighting Martin Murray. He should be fighting Daniel Gill, et cetera. But it seems to me like none of these guys are really chomping at the bit to fight him. Martin Murray got his opportunity and passed it up and looks like he's going to be fighting Felix Sturm. You know, Daniel Gill, I haven't heard anything about him. So I don't know.
Well,
I don't know what else should be expected of him.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you could nitpick, but at the same time, you know, you can also say, well, judging from the evidence we have, I mean, we've seen, you know, Matthew Macklin against Golovkin, and we've seen, you know, Macklin against Sturm, we've seen Macklin against Martinez. You know, we can kind of measure. Sturm's fought all those guys, Gill and Murray and all those guys. You know, Adama had fought Gill and went 12 rounds. So I think he's definitely separated himself from that pack. I mean, it'd be nice to see him fight one of those guys. Definitely, it'd be a step up. I mean, I'd like to see him fight Felix Sturm. I think would still be, you know, a really interesting fight. But I don't think there's any reason to say he's done. You know, I don't think I think he would if those guys were willing to fight him. But look what happens. I mean, how many opponents in a row has this been where they've either been just brutally knocked out or their corner has to save them from him? Or the referee has to save them. I mean, that's becoming another trend where it's like he's not just he's outclassing these guys and just beating the shit out of them.
And beating the shit out of them.
Yeah, dude.
I mean,
so it's finding out what happens, you know, where he goes. Like, because eventually it's going to happen. I mean, we will get maybe Golovkin against Andre Ward. You know, we're going to see, like, what can he do against a real world-class, you know, great fighter? You know, or maybe there is somebody out there with that kind of power that eventually could test him in that regard too. You know, we'll find out what happens when he, you know, can he take the punch of a huge puncher? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to find all this out. He's only going to get bigger, you know, in terms of his fights and his notoriety, and HBO is going to give him a push. So I think we're getting close to where we're going to really see if Golovkin is just kind of a, you know, the latest phenom, or if there's really, you know, substance and he's going to become, you know, something really special.
Well, sooner or later, he's going to get too big for his britches in terms of notoriety, because sooner or later, HBO is going to want something from him if he's not able to get Sergio Martinez. So sooner or later,
he can move up in weight.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Is that, like, sooner or later, they're either going to push him into a fight like with Ward, or they're going to say, all right, well, then move down in weight or something, you know? So sooner or later, it's going to happen. And just to kind of quickly go back on what I was saying earlier, as far as being worried about when he gets hit, I do think it's also fair to note that when you have a style like his, where he's constantly offensive-minded, where he's always looking to land a big shot, kind of like an early Vladimir Klitschko, you're going to get hit. There's no way around it. There's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. When you're looking to land punches all the time, you're going to get hit. So, yeah, it just left up to when he finally reaches some other peak.
Honestly, like, I don't know why people are shitting on that Kirkland fight. I think that could be awesome. You know, I really do. I mean, like, and I like Kirkland. I don't want to see him get knocked out, and I think that's probably the most likely outcome. But I still, you know, I mean, is that really worse than what he fought on HBO? You know, Gregor Proksa or, you know, Matthew? I mean, even Macklin. I mean, Kirkland's got a lot of talent. He's fought some good fighters. He's only had the one real horrible, you know, loss to Ishida, which was just weird. You know, he wasn't really hurt, but he got knocked down so many times, and then Joe Cortez just, like, jumped, you know, teabagged him. So,
yeah.
I mean,
Joe
just
Cortez
with
the...
Yeah, the classic just pants completely panicked. Which is weird, because Cortez ref'd Pacquiao Marquez won, and it was like the same situation, and he let Marquez continue. Marquez was way more hurt than Kirkland was.
Yeah,
but,
and in that fight, Marquez got teabagged by Pacquiao on that last knockdown.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and hit down. But I mean, you know, Cortez changed history, right, with that. I mean, if he would have stopped that fight in the first round, who knows? They may have never even rematched.
Yeah.
But you know, with Kirkland, man, I mean, I just think with his style, why wouldn't you want to see him fight Golovkin? You know he's going to come forward and just throw a million punches, and he's got some power, and he's, you know, yeah, he's probably going to get counterpunched and get hurt, but it'll be exciting while it lasts, and I'm not opposed. You know, when you look at some of the candidates for Golovkin, I mean, I think it'd be interesting if he fought Sergio Mora too, but, you know, I think you could do a lot worse than Kirkland. If he's not going to get, you know, an elite opponent, and to me that really only means like the Sergio or the Andre Ward mega fight. I mean, in all honesty, man, Kirkland to me is in the same category with like Gill and Sturm and Murray and all those dudes. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. I'm going to heavily favor Golovkin. It's either going to be, you know, very exciting and quick, or it's going to be slow and long. But I think eventually the guys who's going to beat Golovkin is going to be somebody special like Andre Ward.
Well, I mean, for me, it's kind of like, all right, if we're going to look at a fight like Golovkin versus Kirkland, is that like something that they're building up for like September, and neither guy is going to fight between, you know, then? Then I'm not going to be, yeah, then I'm
right,
not
yeah,
be
okay.
Real big.
Well, yeah,
I'm going to be like, yeah, fuck that. But
no, I'm not, yeah, I'm not down for that either.
In Golovkin's case, he's probably going to once more fight like three or four times this year. And if Kirkland's one of them, okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's going to come forward.
Yeah, they were rumoring that it would be in like April or May or something. I mean, they would be pretty quick.
Yeah.
Be in like a couple. Yeah, he's going to fight four times,
definitely.
And like Kirkland might be the next
one.
No, I'm
agreeing
down
with you for sure.
I mean,
yeah,
dude,
I don't
Kirkland,
think it's a bad matchup at all.
I just love the style. I mean, I think that with his style, you know, could give problems really to anybody, because I don't think it's easy to just adjust to a guy, you know, coming right at you throwing that many punches. That's why, like, you know, when Andy Frumin was saying how he would want to see Kirkland was, like, his number one choice to fight Mayweather. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Widely derided for that.
Yeah, people on Twitter were like, who is this fucking random guy talking about Kirkland? I was like, damn, goddamn.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
It was pretty funny, though.
But the man had a point in the sense that just like, it's like his style is not one, you know, it's one of those things where it's going to trouble anybody until you figure it out or until you can get into your rhythm. I mean, you know, I think we can say what happened to Ishida was kind of fluky. I mean, we know Kirkland's going to be like in his face throwing a million punches, and he's going to do that until he gets so badly hurt that he can't continue.
Yeah. And he's going to bring heat. Even if it's not on the same skill level or whatever, he's going to be throwing punches. That's the only way he knows how to fight, and that's the only way Ann Wolf will let him fight, because she'll fucking point a rocket launcher at him, right in his face, in the corner, if he doesn't fight that way. Oh, man. Yeah, so one way or another, I mean, Pacquiao Rios wound up kind of being a bust. I would probably blame that more on Rios than Pacquiao, since Rios seemed to fight so, like, sedated. But regardless, going into the fight, we were of the mind that it looked like, style-wise, it had to be good.
Yeah.
And more
yeah.
often than not, when you go into fights like that, it winds up being the case, though. I mean, I would say that Pacquiao Rios was more of an exception than a rule. So, I would have to say that, you know, you put a guy who can really punch and whose chin is maybe slightly untested against a guy who's a little bit smaller but can also really punch and is going to be pressing the fight the entire time, that's recipe for a good fight. And especially if it's going to be one of Golovkin's, like, four fights this year. Yeah, man, sign me up.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of the problem with the thing with Golovkin is that every single opponent just, like, immediately starts moving backward. And I don't see Kirkland doing that. I mean, he never has. Now, Golovkin might force him backward, but I think he's going to intend to come forward and try to get, you know, and Golovkin may allow
Agreed.
Him to do that because he might believe that he has superior craft and he can end up counterpunching him with something huge and, you know, hurting him. But I think Golovkin prefers to be, you know, moving forward, stalking, and eventually, you know, we'll try to turn the fight that way. But I just think it's a lot of interesting dynamic. I mean, nobody else is going to move forward like that and throw that many punches. Now, a fight like – that's kind of like the opposite of that would be Golovkin and Sergio Mora, because Mora would be entirely comfortable moving backward, and I think that's why he presents a more interesting challenge. But, you know, a guy like Matthew Macklin, I mean, you start moving him backward, it's over. And that fight was just done from the very beginning. So
you see what it is? You see what it is?
Yeah. I respect
Fox. He's a good boy.
He is.
Yeah, I love Golovkin. So, you know,
oh, he's great. The purple robe is so big, too.
Yeah, and now it looks like he's – you didn't see the fight, but, you know, every fight he's got, like, a new set of, you know, bejazzled trunks and shit, like, with Triple G on it and different colors. And, yeah, so he's moving up in the world. And, yeah, whatever happens with him, I hope he continues as a character because the guy's funny. He's fun to watch. So, yeah. What was there anything you wanted to bring up or talk about this week before we shut this shit down?
Well, I think we covered it all, pretty much all. But so we had talked about possibly taking a week off after this. The only other fight that I could see on the schedule, I mean, there's a couple Friday night fights, but there's also Derek Chisora and Kevin Johnson coming up.
Yeah, and we're not going to be counting on you to be watching that Friday night fight. Wait, no, it's in Chicago.
Actually, yeah, this Friday is. What's funny is the way they're promoting it is like, meet Mike Tyson. You know, it has nothing to do with, I guess it's like, buy the VIP ticket and meet Mike Tyson. I'm not going to.
Well, that's the only way you're going to be watching Friday Night Fights anyway. But with all these Mike Tyson-promoted cards on Friday Night Fights, I feel like they're sooner or later there's going to be some epic clash between Mike Tyson and Teddy Atlas on the show. Like sooner or later, they're going to call Mike Tyson in to be, you know, oh, man, what's his name? Francisco something. The guy who's always doing the punching little, you know.
Oh, yeah. Teddy. Yeah,
I can't remember his name, but in any event, they're going to call Mike Tyson in to play that role, and Teddy's just going to go, like, a little bit too hard. Pause. It's going to turn into a brawl.
I'm curious, like, what their relationship is. I think it's kind of undefined, you know, because Mike talks about him, publicly now, and they both tell that story about, like, I mean, Atlas, I think it was in his autobiography, you know, he pulled a gun on him, and it was obviously, you know, the crazy falling out and all that stuff with, you know, Atlas's niece or cousin or somebody. But,
yeah,
you know, whatever happened, like, there's obviously still some weird, you know, strained kind of bad blood, but I don't know. Did they show them like kind of interacting at all when Tyson was promoting on ESPN? I think the first show was last year. Wasn't there a shot of them like kind of like shaking hands and doing the arm around moves or no?
Yes.
They pretend to be cordial at least in public.
Yes. And to me, that's kind of what it looks like. I'm no psychiatrist, needless to say. But what it looks like to me is it looks like at this point in his life, Mike Tyson is kind of just like, I don't really give a shit about anything that happened in like the first 40 years of my life, you know? And when it comes to psychoses, I'd have to say that Teddy Atlas certainly sounds like he's right up there with Mike. I mean, I don't know if you even read Teddy's, like, his autobiography, but he talks about how after Donnie Lalonde fired him as a trainer, that he went and got his gun and went, like, roaming the streets to go look for him and shit. And then, like, when he went to his apartment, that Donnie just happened to not be there for a few minutes. And then
or
if he were there, he would have killed him.
Yeah. I remember that story.
I mean, Teddy, I've met him twice, and he was super nice, but that is one dude I'm not screwing with for sure. So it looks to me kind of like Teddy's still holding the grudge and still looking at Mike like, dude, fuck off. And Mike's just kind of like, whatever, Teddy, fine. That's what it looks like to me.
The way that he called that like Rancis Barthelemy thing where he was, insisting that, no, it was a legal knockout. And it's like, no, it was after the bell, like clearly.
Yeah, and
I mean,
for,
it sucked,
and for Teddy
he was gonna
to go,
probably knock him out, but.
Yeah, and for Teddy to go ahead to go and pull that, I thought was pretty low rent, dude. And especially because of that like prior, you know, relationship, and especially because he went so hard in the other direction when it happened. It's just like, what? Come on, man. Everybody saw it.
And the commentator, I guess, can, you know, sometimes shape like the public perception of things. So him saying that was definitely kind of working against Tyson's, you know, fighter, but. Right? I mean, that's right. Isn't Tyson's Tyson was promoting Mendes?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
it just kind of comes off looking petty, if not.
I mean,
else,
even if it wasn't like a conflict of interest, it was just dumb. Like, why would you just think that it's a legal knockout when he clearly knocked him out after the 2 seconds after the bell rang?
Yeah, it doesn't jibe with reality. You know, above all of that, you know, conflict of interest shit, it just doesn't mix with what we saw.
Yeah. Do you like Teddy as an announcer, though, in general? Some kind of
announcer. He's super hot and cold for me. There are times when I just can't even stand it. Like, when he starts getting on crazy, you know, rants and trips and stuff like that, sometimes I have to kind of just tune him out. But when it comes to, like, when he points certain things out that fighters are doing, I like that a lot, because not a whole lot of commentators who haven't fought before are able to do that or do that on a regular basis. I mean, Paulie Malignaggi does it all the time. Roy Jones does it, you know, pretty often too. But a lot of the other commentators don't really get into the nuances and the finer points of, like, what the fighters are doing and how they're setting things up, and I love that. So I like when Teddy does that. It's just that sometimes you have to sit through a lot of crazy bullshit to get to that.
Or his metaphors about whatever the, like, most topical sporting event going on in some other. But
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I overall like Teddy. I mean, I do think, you know, the role of the commentator is kind of 50-50 between entertaining and then, you know, informing, like actually giving, you know, and in boxing commentary, I mean, most of the time it all depends on the guy, right? But I mean, yeah, I think that's Malignaggi's a perfect, you know, he's been a great commentator because he's both, you know, he's entertaining and he's very, you know, he gives you a lot of insights and makes you think about things that you hadn't thought of and gives you the perspective of a fighter. You know, a guy like Roy Jones, I mean, I love him as a commentator, but I think 90% of it is just pure entertainment. You know, I don't think I think there's occasional, like, insights that leak into that, but I do think most of it is just that he's got a really likable personality, you know, and he's fun to listen to, and he conveys, like, the enthusiasm that you're feeling when you see some, you know, spectacular moments. But yeah, Teddy Atlas, I mean, to me, he's you know, he does both, I think, to a certain degree, and I like him on there. I think Tessitore is kind of, you know, I'm not the hugest Tessitore fan, but
he's kind of stuffy.
A bit.
He's just kind of wooden. I mean, he seems like a nice guy, but he just kind of doesn't. He's just kind of like, okay, Teddy, now what's your call on that? You know, like, it just kind of seems so manufactured.
Well, he's one of those guys who I think he could become. He could be talking about college football, which he does do. You know, I think some college football.
Exactly.
But it's like he just has like a, you know, he could do just a sports voice that could do anything, and it's not really. There's not a lot of like boxing specific like. I mean, I think he has a certain passion for it after doing it for a few years, but yeah, I'm not the hugest Tessitore fan, but
yeah, I like the crew over there in general. I think anybody's bad.
It's a solid crew.
And Todd Grisham, he's kind of won me over a little bit. There are times when I kind of like have to just sit there and be like, yeah, I can already tell you don't know what you're talking about, Todd, but he seems like a pretty funny dude with a good personality, and he's gotten much, much, much better. Because when he first started out, I was like, get this dude out, get him off, get him off my screen. Yeah, but
yeah.
Now he's kind of grown on me a bit.
He's good. I mean, you know, Brian Kenny was great on ESPN, and I think I much prefer Kenny to the Kenny of ESPN to the Kenny on Showtime. Even though I like him still, and I think he's very solid, and I do like that they have him in that like anchor role. I think that. On ESPN, he could be completely unbiased. You know, that's the beauty.
He seems kind of misplaced on Showtime to me.
Well, I think he seems that a few times he's been more of a representative of the kind of the network, meaning like the golden boy, you know, boxing kind of you know, machine that's just pumping out propaganda and stuff. You know, I mean,
well,
I think he.
Yeah, I remember him going after Floyd in that interview. Remember?
Oh yeah, and the Classic Sports Center.
Yeah,
was amazing.
He was great
on Friday Night Fights, too.
Yeah, no, he was. Yeah, I like Kenny. I like Brian Kenny. On Twitter, he kind of comes off a little douchey sometimes, but I like him.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that.
Sure,
he gets retweeted.
Douchey on Twitter, too. But
who doesn't
come off
douchey on Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to say, I think fucking everybody comes off douchey on Twitter, but whatever. Yeah, well, that's especially
Eric Raskin, if you're Al Bernstein.
Hell yeah, dude. Eric Raskin's a real jerk. Jesus.
Can't Can't believe he fucking kept criticizing Tompkins over such a minor thing.
Jesus, dude. What a nitpicking fecker. Seriously.
Vincent was legendary. It was actually what I was thinking. It was actually like one of, in my opinion, I mean, I think Tompkins is all right. I think he used to do, where was he at? Was he on Showtime Boxing way back in, like, a long time ago? Or was he on HBO?
He's been on a few different networks. And probably, like, right around, like, the late 80s, early 90s, he was doing a lot. And he was still doing a lot of stuff, actually, through the 2000s, too. But he's been around a long time.
Yeah,
so that's why.
I mean,
he's kind of part of that group. Like the
Tompkins
is
solid.
Farhood, Bernstein, like a lot of those guys kind of came up together and know each other. So that's probably why it was taken personally.
Yeah, I mean, Tompkins seems like a good guy, and he's a solid commentator and all that. But, like, you know, Vincent was one of his finest achievements. I mean, I wouldn't shy from that. I thought it was brilliant.
I don't know if I'd go that far because somebody will get mad.
But yeah, but
yes,
I can't remember Tompkins like on any real classic calls, but he might have even been doing it before my time.
Let's just be honest, he's no Lampley.
He's no Lampley. Or Merchant, or, you know, anyone who rose above mediocrity.
I think he's a very good commentator. I don't think there's anything
bad
about him, but no, you're right in that he doesn't really have any type of like huge defining moment as a boxing commentator, and for the most part, he kind of goes under the radar. But also, I mean, in that field, a lot of people would say that's a good thing, though.
Well, yeah, that's
true.
Some people prefer that style of commentating. You know, I mean, I know so many people who love Al Bernstein, and I mean, I think Bernstein seems like a really, really nice guy, and I think he's really solid as a boxing commentator. But to me, he doesn't. You know, he's not as like flamboyant as guys like Merchant and Lampley, who are trying to like infuse every line with some kind of like poetry and all that. And I know it's at times it's really pretentious, but I also find it amusing whether it works or doesn't work. And I think they've just, you know, the guys who are more kind of like straightforward, you know, and I think Bernstein's a great guy, and he's been in boxing for how long?
Well,
I mean, I bought the guy's book, you know, so I think he's an awesome guy.
He and Tompkins both were on ESPN on, I think it was like either Tuesday night fights or Thursday night fights in like, gosh, like 25 years ago. So, I mean, that's probably why, you know, I mean, they work together, and also Tompkins and
Rich
Marotta. Yeah, Tompkins and Rich Marotta, like, I don't know if you remember, but it was right around, like, the late 90s and early 2000s when, on Fox Sports, they did the Sunday night fights when, you know, Sean O'Grady was, like, the color guy.
Yeah,
and the interviewer, yeah, he was,
and it was
Tompkins
it,
and Marotta.
That was when, like,
the
Best
guys.
Damn Sports Show was on, right?
Yes.
Because I think a lot
of
times they'd have, like, I don't know, I just remember James Toney being on there one time. I think he fought on Fox Sports. Once in that
and
period.
I think that and I'm kind of ashamed to know this, but I think that Sean O'Grady also for a little bit was commentating like Tough Man contests along with what's that dude's name, Matt Vaskert, and he calls Padre games here in San Diego.
I don't know.
Now.
I thought O'Grady was on USA Tuesday Night Fights too, but maybe that wasn't.
I think he was before that. He's been there. Like he's been around for a bit too, but. Jesus, yeah. I guess we're just getting... We're old, man. We're veterans in the boxing game, homie.
Yeah.
OGs and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I wasn't trying to diss, like, Tompkins and Bernstein. I mean, I think they're both solid commentators.
It's okay. I'm tweeting right now that you're basically just Tupac-ing them on the show.
Good. Bernstein doesn't really know how to use Twitter anyway, so... Have you ever seen his partials?
Oh, yeah, he tweets a lot of fragments, but that's all right.
A lot of single letters. But
come on.
No,
he's
dude, he's a good guy. No, I do respect Bernstein a lot, and I think he you know, if you prefer, like, the kind of no-nonsense, just a guy, then I totally understand why people really like Bernstein as a commentator. But I guess I kind of like that whole, like, you know, the pageantry of it and all the – and I think that the HBO team always did a little bit – It took that to a little bit, you know, more of like a literary level than the Showtime guys. I mean, even before Bernstein, they had a fucking terrible crew. It was like, what's that dude's name? The fighter.
On Showtime?
Remember the old Showtime crew? Yeah, it was like Steve Albert and Ferdy Pacheco. And, yeah, Bobby Chiz.
Yeah. Yeah, Bobby Chiz was on it, Mr. Mensa. Yeah, I remember that.
I mean, the Bobby Chiz, Larry Merchant, the gap between those two was pretty much, you know.
Yeah, and then Bobby got like
Gennady Golovkin and Osuma Adama might have been less of a mismatch.
And then Bobby Chiz got like his fourth DUI and got kicked off of the crew. Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was solid.
Yeah, I don't remember
solid
that part.
Solid stuff, Mr. Chiz. Solid stuff, Mr. Chiz.
Yeah, some very different. It was different style, you know. And I mean, I think Bernstein crew was a vast improvement on that.
So let's bring it to a compliment then. Barry Tompkins is better than Bobby Chiz. Okay, like can we at least like leave it there?
Absolutely.
So we're still positive here.
He's better than Castle Chalice too.
Oh yeah.
And actually,
Oh, yeah. The
most surprising thing that from that whole exchange that I saw with the controversy over the the Vincent criticism, I was like, fucking Barry Tompkins is on Twitter. That's pretty crazy. I mean, I don't expect that guy is fucking like Boardwalk Empire.
My mom's not even on Twitter.
Gangster
what
suit
the fuck?
Sitting there tweeting on his phone. But that's cool.
Jesus, my mom doesn't even know how to use Twitter, dude. What the hell? This is ridiculous.
But it was definitely no offense. I mean, it should not have been offended because I think it was one of the greatest, the best parts of that whole Ortiz experience on Fox Sports.
I thought it was something that was relatively lighthearted in the grand scheme of things. And then just like two parties who kind of just were, set in their stance that they wanted to be set in their stance. And that was it. Yeah, I don't know. Well, it didn't seem like a huge deal to me, but that's just my opinion.
Agreed.
So, yeah, that's how we're commentating the feuds between, other boxing writers and commentators and whatnot. And that's what we do here on Queensbury Radio.
We should make that a regular feature because there's certainly an abundance of them in boxing. But
Actually, that's not a bad idea.
Not everyone's as much of our boy as those guys. So
yeah,
they
probably
wouldn't think it was cool.
No.
But I'm still
no. We'd probably get even further shunned into obscurity we'll talk about it. Well, we'll probably take a week off next week. Well, do you want to shut this shit down?
Yes, I think we should.
Real quick, if I may, just to kind of plug myself, pause a little bit. Yesterday, I found out that I made it to the top 20 finalists to be the next in-park PA announcer for the San Diego Padres. So that was kind of cool.
I saw that, man. And congratulations. What was that contest
you.
Like? Like, what did you do to get in there?
I actually didn't even know. I didn't know about it. I didn't know anything about it, but my coworker said, hey, have you been listening to the radio or, watching the news? And I'm like, no, I don't really listen to the radio and I don't watch the news. I read the news. What are you talking about? And, basically, she told me that they're going to be having open tryouts for some commentating job is what she said. And I was like, I don't know about that. I don't really want to commentate. But when I looked into it, they said it was actually going to be for a public announcer job, like the guy who, in the ballpark
announces the
goes,
players.
And next to bat, blah, 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 Anyway, so I went to it. It was in like an open casting call type of thing. It was supposed to start at like 9 a.m. and I got there at like 7:30 and there was already like a few hundred people there. Anyway, I tried out. I gave some little – I did the script that they gave me and it lasted all of, maybe 45 seconds. I thought I did well. Some people clapped, et cetera, but regardless, obviously I did.
A few people in the room were crying. I mean, I don't for what it was.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a baby who pulled the sucker out of its mouth and was just like, get that guy a job. So it was awesome, but I didn't know how well I did because weirdly, when we were speaking, it was being projected throughout the stadium, but it was on like a few second delay because of that. And so I couldn't hear what I was saying. You know what I mean? Like I could only read. And if I was stopping to listen, I couldn't hear it. Like I was going to screw it up if I stopped to listen. So I couldn't tell if I did well or not because I couldn't hear myself. And but yesterday they called and they said that I made it to like a final 20 and I'm going to be going this weekend to They're having like a Padres fan fest this weekend, which is basically anybody who's a Padres fan in San Diego or wherever else come out, and it's some free event where, like, you know, the players come out and they're like, you know, signing stuff and blah, blah, blah. And so apparently at some point during that, we're going to be doing like a public tryout, the last 20 of us. And then from there, it's going to go to like an internet vote and all this shit.
Oh,
so
shit.
The reason why I brought it up is because pretty soon, as soon as I know, I'll give out the link to vote for me. So anybody who likes this program or just wants to be cool or wants to get on my good graces so that eventually when I'm famous and have a lot of money, I can kick down something, I'll tweet that shit out and vote for me. That's all I wanted to say.
That's awesome, man. Good luck.
Thank you very much. So, for James Foley of Bad Left Hook, check out his stuff there. And I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com. Please visit that site as well. Yes, thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Easy.